The Summit by Revive is back, and you're invited to join us in Nashville, November 8th through 10th, for an exclusive conversation about the state of healthcare. Together with top managed care executives, legal experts, and thought leaders, we'll take on everything from care delivery constraints to reputation attacks. In short, we'll help you navigate the chaos of healthcare. So dust off your cowboy boots and join us. Reserve your spot at reviveagency.com/events.
3, 2, 1.
Welcome, everyone, to this week's episode of the No Normal Show, brought to you by Revive. This is where we leave all things status quo, traditional, old school, and boring in the dust and celebrate the new, the powerful, the innovative, the future, all related to how brands can lead the way in health. I am your co-host, Chris Wickline, Senior Vice President of Strategy at Revive, and I am joined today by two very special guests, Christian Barnett, SVP of Strategy at Revive. Hello, Christian.
Hi there, Chris. Great to be here. Wonderful to be on the podcast.
And I'm also joined by Lucas Haggerty, VP of Strategy at Revive. Hi, Lucas.
Hello, Chris. Hello, Christian.
Oh, boy. I have been looking forward to this episode because we're going to talk about something that I think is a really fun topic. It is around brand and service line marketing and the roles of each. But before we do that, there's another reason I was looking forward to this, because I happen to get the lovely opportunity to spend a lot of time with Christian and Lucas. So it's going to be fun and lively. But before we jump in, I would really love, Christian, can you tell us and tell our listeners a little bit about who you are? I know you may be a familiar voice to some.
Yeah, sure. My name's Christian. My accent kind of gives away where I come from. Brooklyn, of course. My background work-wise is, I've done a load of things in our space. I was originally a researcher, and then I worked as a strategist in advertising agencies in London and New York. And then I worked as a brand consultant in a branding company, head of strategy there, did my own little thing for a while. And then I spent the last 4 or 5 years with Revive, mainly strategy, but a little bit of creative here and there, and a little bit of research here and there as well. Most of the brands I've worked on have been non-healthcare, but the last 4 or 5 years have been strictly healthcare.
Awesome. Thank you. You are a breath of fresh air, bringing a lot of new insight to the healthcare space. Lucas, tell us who you are.
Well, my accent doesn't quite reveal my background as much as Christian's. I'm from South Carolina, but it doesn't come through as thickly. But I started my career in consumer branding out in San Francisco on the West Coast. I worked with a lot of tech startups back in the day. Had a blast doing that, seeing work on shelves. Took a little break to go to business school, and then got into the world of healthcare marketing. So I've been enjoying this side of things for the last several years, and looking forward to this chat.
Awesome. Well, I can't think of two better people to have this conversation with today. I know it's going to be a lively one. So our topic today is around brand and service line marketing, and it's really kind of focused in a few different areas. It's around, how do we think about the role of brand and service line marketing? How do they work together to support our businesses? And it is a regular conversation that we have with clients. What is the job of each? How should they work together? And how should they work together creatively? So that's going to be the crux of our conversation. And I know you both have a lot of thoughts on this. So as we think about that first question, you know, what's the role of brand marketing and what's the role of service line marketing and how do they support each other? I think my general observation that I'd really love for you to react to is that we tend to see that in healthcare, there's more of a focus on service line marketing than brand. And I think some of that is that we're pushed straight to service line by our leadership because it's kind of our most obvious product. Whereas the role of brand is a little bit more misunderstood and underfunded in our space. But Christian, tell me a little bit about, particularly coming from outside, what are your thoughts on the roles of brand and service line, and how should they support each other?
Okay, thanks, Chris. I'm gonna perhaps spend more time talking about brand, but I'll start with service line. And it seems, I mean, if you think about our job as kind of marketeers, what are we trying to affect? And I think, for example, if you think about like a cancer service line or a cardiology service line, it's not like we can kind of expand the market or create kind of extra demand there. You might better say that we can switch share from, you know, one hospital or one kind of provider to another. But even then, I think our role is pretty kind of down the pecking order. You know, if you're buying a shampoo or a toothpaste, how a brand is marketed or communicated or advertised, it's probably higher up the pecking order in importance. Because if you need to go to a specialty service line, then you're going to get a referral from an expert, you know, and you're going to have a lot of word of mouth or conversations. It's an important, really important thing. Not saying what we do is nothing, but it's perhaps not as important in what we do as other factors which are driving decision making. You know, also what's in network and what isn't in network. Whereas brand, when brand works really well, I think it's one of those rising tide floats all boats type situations. Now, it may be a longer term investment, and it may not be so immediate in what's coming back, and it may not be so easy to see in what's coming back. Like, you can't always attribute someone walking through the doors to a particular piece of brand advertising. But if you get it right and you get it good and you stay with it and you know, you play the long game, then reputation improves. Then probably affinity improves, consideration improves, I want to go there improves. So everything improves across all things. So I guess we're going to go deeper on this, but the starter thought would be, I think we get a little fixated on service line and short-term impacts. Which may be fine in some sectors, toothpaste, but in our sector, it's probably a different dynamic going on. So I think we should spend a bit more time and energy and resources on developing brand and long-term brand thinking.
Yeah, and I think this kind of continues that thought, but to be a little bit too reductive, you can think of brand as trying to elicit emotion or stir emotion, and service line as trying to drive to an action. But again, I think that's reductive because both should be able to do a little bit of the other. So service line, like we've kind of talked in the past about how that's, you don't want to purely talk speeds and feeds. You don't want to just be talking about an award you've won or showing a picture of a physician. Your service line campaign needs to be stirring, eliciting some sort of emotion as well in order to be effective. Brand two, and Christian, I think this is what you're getting, you're kind of alluding to, is it's brand isn't as soft as some people might pejoratively say it is, right? I think that the more that you are eliciting an emotion or stirring a connection with your potential audience, your consumer base, that is going to drive later action. It's that healthcare is so unique in that people aren't looking to buy it right away. So that becomes, brand almost becomes even more important because it's a latent connection that you're trying to make with the market. So when they do need to make a purchase, when they do need to make a decision, they already have some emotional connection with you. So I know that started off with that reduction of brand drives emotional connections, the service line drives action, but I think both need to be doing a little bit of the lifting of the other as well.
I think sometimes, you know, it does depend on service lines. Some service lines, I think you may more quickly get to a direct action, which is a flu vaccine or, you know, like, you know, something which is like that, or even the screenings where there's a clearer connection and people, you know, need it. But I think very often service lines are almost like acting like brand lifters, you know. They're kind of they're almost doing a brand job by talking about a service line in a way which is probably consistent with the overarching organization. Whether it's creatively consistent is a different issue, perhaps we'll come back to. But it feels sometimes that the work we do, the service line almost feels like a little brand ad in its own right, you know? And that's fine. I mean, that's, I just think these things are like, let's do it with open eyes. But I think very often, you know, we're putting out service line ads, which probably have more brand effect than they do driving inquiries or patients coming through the door.
Okay, you guys have you've just thrown out some really interesting stuff. I want to go back to a couple of things that you both touched on. The first was the idea of emotion versus action, right? What is interesting to me is we live in a very emotional space. Healthcare is a very emotional thing. Why do you think it is sometimes hard for us to be able to sell why creating emotional connection to our healthcare brands is important?
If you think about it, I mean, there is no more emotional time than when your health is threatened. So it really is surprising that, I mean, this is one of the most rich industries for storytelling and creating brands and creating campaigns that are driven by and anchored in emotion. So it is surprising that as an industry, it has been so promotional for so long. But I think as we see more consumer brands entering the space, and the consumer expectation or consumer connection to healthcare brands starts to become more intimate, I think we are seeing people dial up emotion in their hospital campaigns.
Something which struck me really, the use of emotion, I think is really interesting. And I'm going to contrast two scenarios, and I'm going to ask you which one seems the better one, I guess, in a way. So I've been working in wound care recently, and I happened to chance upon this little film on a website. It was actually a competitor website to our client, and it had this handheld record, like a little video record, of a mum driving to the scene of where her son had been, like a motorcycle crash. The end of the story was that he had a leg amputated, but the mum got out of the car and dashed towards the crash, and she was saying, "Oh my god, oh my god, oh my god," like louder and more screamy and screamy. And you saw a little snippet of where her camera pointed, and the camera was going everywhere, and it was so authentic, and it was so touching and so moving. It was amazing. And I think generally we don't like going there because it makes us a little uncomfortable, when actually it's the truth and the drama and the reality of what we do. Contrast that with a doctor on a billboard who's like, I do wound care. You know, like, there's two things are so far apart. And I just think we should lean into the former rather than the latter more often.
Yeah. No, that's a great example. I know exactly what you're referring to. I know you shared that with me, and I think it is a super example of how something took a very more, a much more meaningful kind of point of view than just simply the more functional attributes of it. Christian, you said something a little bit earlier that I want to make sure I understand. You made the comment about how service lines can also serve in uplifting the brand, right? Tell me a little bit about what your thoughts are there.
Yeah, so I'll use like the model I kind of know about. I used to work with this brand system called Brand Asset Evaluator, very good. And it kind of linked revenue and share performance to brand perception. So it had like business rationale. And I'm going to use Apple as the case here. The Apple kind of master brand was kind of kept being innovative, being leader, being premium, being distinctive. Because every time it released a new sub-brand like Mac or iPod or iTouch in those days, or any of those services, it kind of infused the parent brand, the overall brand, with those values. And I think that the same applies for us, right? Service brands can often do a favor for the overarching brand. You know, if we're particularly good at something, or we're breakthrough at something, or we have a particular kind of level of authenticity at something, those things come shining through, and they kind of like reflect back or kind of halo out to the parent brand. And I think those things are as important in developing brand as they are in driving volumes. And quite often I suspect we kid ourselves that they're driving volumes, and actually they're being in service of the brand more. I mean, we have to be careful what service line we're talking about here. But I think in those some of the service lines, we convince ourselves we're doing one thing, and actually we might be doing something else.
Yeah. Well, that's a really interesting thought. And I guess that always then begs the question of, well, do they always have to fit together? You know, I mean, it's always, I think, a question of, well, how do I think about my brand and my brand? Let's just jump right into creative, my brand creative. And what does that mean for my service line? How do I have to make them work? Do I have to make them match? It's something that we always kind of, I think, you know, are asked about, as well as consider in some of the work that we do.
I think it's always an exercise in give and take. The more that you can draw and tie the service line campaign to the brand, you start to find plenty of efficiencies. Just thinking about, as Christian said, the elevation of brand that those service line campaigns can provide. Also, the halo effect that the master brand can provide. So there's a benefit there. The further you take away those service line campaigns, you get to be a little bit more targeted. So depending on which service line you're talking about, you may have a hyper-focused audience that you might want to have very different messaging. You might want to have different photography, or your subject base for your creative is different. So it is kind of playing this balance and taking it on a case-to-case basis where you need that lift and where you're going to draw more benefit, whether it's tightly connected to the larger brand or separated out and more targeted.
So are you telling me there's no absolute answers? I'm looking for absolutes here, guys.
I went to business school. The answer is always case by case.
No, I get that. I get that. And I think that's sometimes also a frustrating thing, is in what cases does it fit? What cases doesn't it? And, you know, I think you're calling out some good points, but you know, I also think of out of category examples of, you know, how you can make things perhaps work together, but yet not fit. And Christian, I know we've talked extensively about Dove. And I wonder if you could kind of describe in that scenario where, you know, how the brand and different products work together, and they may not always be, you know, in exact lockstep in the types of things that they're communicating.
Yeah, I mean, Dove's a really... I've worked on Dove in a little tiny way twice. Once before the campaign for Real Beauty, I was testing advertising. That's when I was a researcher. And their big claim was a quarter of a bar of moisturizer. And it's so interesting to think about that was their like product claim like 20 whatever years ago, 25 years ago. But what they did was to kind of, as we all know, take this kind of big, I mean, you know, we would call it a post-health system brand in a way, right? They would take this big thought that other brands in the beauty industry could easily have taken, but they decided they took it and they owned it, and they still own it, and no one else can own that now because they've done such a brilliant job. And that brand level really speaks to a universal thought, where people from all over the world, from all shapes, sizes, colors, can see that, right? But it's not always appropriate for every single product they're selling. The second time I worked on Dove, I was asked to look at their male grooming products. And like Campaign for Real Beauty and male grooming products, they don't fit as automatically as some of the other pieces, right? So even at that level, you've got to start working out what, you know, what you're doing to sell and what you're doing to create this halo for the brand. And if you look at the brand, I mean, it's interesting when you look at it, some of the products don't have that Campaign for Real Beauty idea, but they do have executional consistencies. They look like they may be the same family, like the use of white and the use of typeface and the use of how it feels almost. It doesn't feel like another brand. It feels like the Dove brand, but the messages are different. And what's interesting, there's been a lot of work done by two pretty famous econometricians, Les Bonnet and Peter Field, who've done a lot of work for the IPA. And I should just say the IPA is an amazing, the Institute of Practitioners in Advertising. It's a London, UK-based, and it was set up primarily to prove the business value of advertising. So they always link everything back to revenues. And they've demonstrated that the two brand level and the product together have lifted the total value of the Dove brand, I think, in the last couple of decades, by a couple of billion dollars. It's phenomenal when you see those two things working in tandem. And they're not matching luggage. They look like the same family, but they're not matching luggage for sure. I think it's just a great case. And I think it actually liberates how we think about these things when we go about our work. Because all too often, I think there's a tendency to drive towards matching luggage when it's not always the right answer.
Yeah. I definitely know that that's a conversation that comes up frequently. And sometimes it's in the forcing fit that things feel really awkward.
Yeah.
But, you know, to your point, how you bring together tone and visual cues and those sorts of things, even if it's not basically a set of matching luggage, is a different way to think about it. And to your point, liberating.
I mean, I can add on to that. I don't know whether I'll say.
Yeah, go for it.
I mean, there's a couple of things I think. So firstly, having a great idea is really useful, right? So having a really good idea behind what you do. And I think Lucas said it earlier, if you're talking, healthcare is interesting because you're speaking to all ages. So sometimes if you're speaking to people who are like 65 plus, you've got to have a different, it's got to feel a little bit differently from if you're talking to 25-year-olds, right? It can still be the same kind of thought behind it. I mean, Nike does a pretty good job talking to a whole range of ages and about, it's whatever age you are, you're still trying to be your peak performance self, right? So that's a really good idea which applies across. And Kaiser Thrive, how do you thrive as a 65-year-old and how you thrive as an 18-year-old may be very different, but that informing thought is really important, I think. And the second thing is personality. We do a lot of kind of work with brand personality. If you find the right personality, I think that gives you a kind of a set of, I don't know about guardrails, but it gives you some kind of sense of where you should be. And again, you can be fun, enjoyable, approachable to a 65-year-old, and you can be fun, enjoyable, approachable to an 18-year-old. They just may look a little bit different, but the thinking behind it is really what's keeping it kind of coherent.
Yeah, Christian, since I'm in Nashville, I'll give kind of a music-based visual. I like to think of it as almost like a soundboard, and you have to, whether it's a cardiology or ortho, whatever service line it is, you have to be working from the same bass song as the brand. So whether or not you dial up or down the fun or the seriousness, if it's oncology, the more you dial up or down the attributes, that can depend on the service line, but it all has to be coming from the same place. You can't be bringing in entirely new creative assets or bringing in a kind of voice or tone attribute that's completely unfamiliar or at worst at odds with the core brand. But you can modulate, and that's where you go from matching luggage to at least the luggage is from the same company.
Or harmonious sound, as in the case of your wonderful example. Well, let me ask a question then to the two of you. What do you see? Who do you see doing this well in healthcare, right? Or who are some examples you point to in healthcare? I know, Christian, you mentioned Kaiser. Are there, and I think it was the Thrive campaign?
Yeah, I think that's a good one. I'm also going to mention one of ours. I think we should. There's no harm we can do that. I think, we're working on this campaign up in Maine for Northern Light Health. And the campaign really is about, how are you? That's the kind of main idea. But that notion of how are you, which is very colloquial and very kind of connective, we're able to use that as a kind of like a base thought. But every time we do a different kind of service line, we're able to bend it and flex it according to the need of the business need of the audience. That's a really nice, useful, big idea that in theory can go on for a long time, and it should go on for a long time, and it can flex and bend, but whenever you see it, it's still got some consistency. It may not be like a matching luggage, but you see certain elements and you feel that it's come from the same place. So I think I'd throw that one out, Chris.
That's
great. Oh, it's all because you work on it as well. I mean,
well, yeah, I mean, we do touch that, and it is something we are very proud of. And I think it is, it is also sometimes it's difficult because there isn't black and white. You have to be, as you mentioned, Lucas, you have to take it on a case by case basis. And sometimes that makes it a little bit more uncomfortable. So that idea of really kind of focusing on what's your objective, and where does it fit, and, does it fit and doesn't it? We can't force puzzle pieces, right? Because then we lose things.
Yeah, and that yes, that answer it depends can be so frustrating. But the just thinking about some of the variables that go into that decision. Of course, you have brand variables. So we talked a little bit earlier about what is the halo effect that the core brand can bring. Similarly, what is the halo that the service line could provide either up to the core brand or across other service lines? So there is the variable of, okay, what is the health or what is the equity that each of these brands bring? There's also business realities. So I think that's important for us to always remember and always interrogate in any brand exercise is what is the business case asking for? What is the business challenge at hand? I think that's a variable that we always have to consider in any business exercise as well.
Okay, good. So let me ask another, well, it's kind of appropriate to say the $64,000 question. Yeah. The question always becomes, okay, I have a pot of money and I have a budget and I have a lot of different things to do with it. How do I think about allocating my budget between brand and service lines? What should that look like? Do I weight one more heavily? We said they work together, right? I'm pretty sure I heard you guys talking about the fact that this works together. That's also our point of view as an agency. But where are we at today? How do we think about allocating those funds? How should it be in the future?
I'll do it from a really brand-centric perspective, right? I mean, we could do it from a business perspective and say, you know, where have we got a really profitable service line or where do we have capacity we need to fill. I mean, I put like that's a little bit more of a business frame on it. But if we put a strictly brand frame on it, I would say number one, look at see where you are, audit, see where you are, and then work out where your brand needs to be if it's not there already. And that's probably the most important thing to get first. I think Burnett and Field say split 60% towards brand. I mean, that's a guideline. But if your brand is in need of a overhaul, then perhaps that should be where the, you know, where money goes first of all to get that set and right, because that will have an effect upon everything. So that may be, you know, in that circumstance of, you know, where to allocate. I guess secondarily, if your brand just say stands for something which is to do with innovation, say it's like AMC and we've got great innovation, breakthrough innovation, then perhaps we might choose our service lines or some initiatives we're doing or some research we're doing which support that notion of innovation. And now if we're choosing it from a business perspective, it may be a different choice. But if it's strictly from a brand perspective, we might say we're going to double down on things which really reinforce that overall sense. So that's where I would head. And you almost have like a, you know, if nothing new is happening in that service line this year, don't put any money behind it. Just let it do its thing. No, so I've given you a really brand-centric piece, but that may be, you know, of course, in the real world, you've got to balance things off, but that wouldn't be a bad way to think about it if you're thinking about it with that lens. And then I guess you'd go down which is the most innovative service line or research program or initiative or even thought leadership we're doing, work your way down and say, you know, let's make sure that a good number, a small number, get really strong focus, and we make sure we're attaching them to the overall brand. And I think that number would stop pretty quickly unless you've got big budgets.
Yeah. Well, what I really keyed in on what you said is, you know, perhaps if there's nothing new, you might not even think about marketing a particular service line. What I would say is, you know, there's other things maybe below the line. I would say something like CRM, right? You still have plenty of opportunity to do a lot of targeted marketing within your current patient base that can drive volume. And again, the way I think about some of that, and of course, anything really bottom of funnel, right? Certainly you want to be in terms of always on search and those sorts of things. There are other tactics, but perhaps to your point, you know, where you're thinking about how service lines can really support more of the brand lift is on those lines that ladder more specifically to the thing you're trying to communicate about your brand.
And if your brand is so like strong and powerful, then it might be time to leverage it. And you do spend more money on marketing, as you say, Chris, where you can get a more directly kind of correlated response because you've invested so much in the brand. There may be a period where you don't need to invest so much for a while, and you can draw down upon it, like, you know, the brand banks, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. And to further complicate things, we have a AMC client in California where we actually bring some service line messaging up into the brand campaign. So that's another way where some of these initiatives can be overlapped. You change your call to action, but you're couching a service line message within an overarching brand campaign.
Mm-hmm. It's gonna be essentially the service line becomes a strong proof point for your brand in that case. Exactly. It's not actually just a separate thing.
I wish I said that 20 minutes ago, Chris, and you wouldn't have had me talking on and on and on and on. That's perfect.
Oh, no, but your accent is so perfect.
I'm just an accent. I've learned that.
So let me ask one question. I mean, I think, what is your perspective? I know, of course, Christian, you made the point that, look, it's every individual case. It's not raw numbers. Even, you know, 60% of your budget on brand and 40 is nothing more than a guideline. You of course, have to look at your individual circumstance, your brand status, your service lines, et cetera. But what is your perspective coming from outside of healthcare? And I know, and Lucas, you as well came from outside of healthcare on how we inside the industry allocate that budget. Do we give enough attention to brand?
I don't think so. Just straight up, I don't think so. I don't think so. I mean, a couple of points. I mean, if you go to like a P&G, their core competence is running brands. That is their core competence. Whereas our core competence in our sector is not managing brands, it's treating people. So, I mean, you have to be a little bit like, what are we really doing here? That said, for the reasons we've gone through today, I do think it's also how clients generate their budgets, right? Often the budgets are service line driven budgets, when perhaps they could be brand level budgets. Like, where do all the service lines first meet? You know, who's the budget holder for all of that stuff? Because you might think that if we do brand really well, then there'd be more. I mean, as Lucas said, it's a really emotional, really important part of everyone's life at some stage. And, you know, we are more important than a shampoo. So why aren't our brand? Well, depends, right? But for most people, I suspect. But, but why don't we have these fantastic, and then some of the healthcare in America is absolutely, sure, there's another discussion here, but some of the top brands are top brands. And it just feels a shame in such an emotionally driven, important piece of our lives that we don't spend more in what do we mean, and also defend ourselves against some of those kind of value attack things you've discussed elsewhere, that some of a good brand is you're insulating your reputation and you're deflecting attacks. And I just don't think we've done a great job in kind of fueling or nourishing or nurturing powerful long-term brands that stay in people's minds. I mean, I hope that the era of kind of internet and, you know, in a way getting care from anywhere or the ability to helps us kind of overcome that. Yeah, you got me feeling strongly about that, Chris.
Well, you know, and it's an interesting comment. I mean, again, the idea that, you know, service line marketing campaigns aren't going to inoculate you from, you know, from broader reputation issues, right? It's just not, while it has a job to do, that is not a job it's going to do.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah, I'd agree that brand is probably a bit underserved, but I say that at the same time acknowledging that there are plenty of reasons why people probably over-index on the service line. And I think that it might be seen as easier for a few different reasons. You can be a little bit more targeted when you know exactly who your specific audience is. I think you get an opportunity to do that with service line campaigns. There are also opportunities to highlight physicians. So you probably have a lot of physician pressure. They would probably prefer to see their service line highlighted as opposed to a brand campaign. It's a little bit easier maybe to draw a direct line from a service line ad to an action or to some sort of revenue generation. But I think that is taking the easy way out a little bit. Mm-hmm. So while I do completely understand the position of a brand manager kind of maybe being biased towards a service line campaign, it may be at the expense of a really, really helpful brand campaign.
Well, this, go ahead, Christian.
I'll add one thought here. It's made me, what Lucas was saying made me think a lot. Like, you know, great brands often have people who believe in great brands at the top table. And I don't know whether, you know, at some level, brand is should be a C-suite discussion. I don't think in our world it is a C-suite discussion. And I think what happens is that we end up overly anxious and worried about the work we're doing, because we're in a culture which is about proof and evidence and protocol. Yeah. And often the culture of the industry has an effect upon the culture of the marketing in the industry. I think, you know, we get a little bit affected by that kind of gravitational pull towards evidence, proof, protocol. You know. And I do think that, you know, marketing and brand thinking, you know, should have a place, you know, in the upper echelons of our clients and discussions. Because I do think it's proven that brand is a good business investment. But it often falls on deaf ears, I think, in our sector.
Yeah. Well, hopefully this conversation was inspiring, also provided some good food for thought for our listeners to be able to be champions bring this conversation up to the C-suite level. I think we should wrap it up with this. I've thoroughly enjoyed the conversation. Love your perspectives and really appreciate your thoughts today. So thank you, Lucas. Thank you, Christian, so much for being with us. Also, thank you to our listeners for joining in. If there's something you would like us to cover, shoot us an email at knownormal@reviveagency.com. We'd also appreciate if you'd share the show with your friends and colleagues and give us a review and rating on iTunes. All of that would be appreciated. Until next time, don't ever be satisfied with the normal. Push that no normal, y'all, and push that brand and service line marketing discussion up to the top. And we'll see you next time. 3